Our next presenter, Marietta Orlovsky.
Yes, Marietta Orlovsky, and she is an associate professor at Wright State University in the Boonshoff School of Medicine and serves as the Health Promotion and Education Program Advisor in the Masters of Public Health program. Her current work involves health behavior measurement and risk reduction in children and adolescents. Dr. Orlovsky has served as an educator for several USDA team nutrition projects, including the one that she is about to tell us about.
Hello. I again want to thank you for attending the last session on the last day. I'm glad to see so many faces. As Chris said, my name is Marietta Orlovsky, and I'm here to talk about a statewide project to nudge healthy choices. This was a statewide project that was primarily coordinated through the Ohio Department of Education, the Office of Child Nutrition. Susan Patton is the team nutrition coordinator for our state. She couldn't be here today, but I served as the project evaluator, much like Melissa. But then across the state, we were organized regionally. And so we're in Southwest Ohio. Dayton, Ohio is in Southwest. And so we had schools, but then also we had schools in the Cleveland area, and Allison Patrick from the Cuyahoga County Board of Health did those. We had schools from Northwest, the Toledo Bowling Green area, and Becky Poposik and two graduate students worked with those schools. And then we had a nutrition consulting company help us in Northeast for some schools that were kind of in a hard-to-reach area. And then in Central Ohio, Julie Kennel from the Ohio State University. I am here representing the team, and I have no financial disclosures as well. I heard somebody say in a session yesterday, but I wish I did, which I thought was kind of funny. But I do want to acknowledge that this project was funded by a team nutrition grant that was administered to the Ohio Department of Education. So, Smarter Lunchrooms, a little background information. Has anybody ever heard of Smarter Lunchrooms? Oh, good. Well, this is their slide, and they would say that that's about the norm, that they're fairly new. They're 4 years old, and their awareness is growing. That, and we were one of the first states to receive a team nutrition grant for Smarter Lunchrooms, but now it is becoming a lot more common. Smarter Lunchrooms is based upon behavioral economic theory, and it's really about training school nutrition teams to introduce easy, subtle, sustainable changes into their cafeterias that can really influence student selection as well as consumption of some targeted items. The other thing that I'll just remind you of the context for this is new meal pattern guidelines were introduced in school cafeterias about 2 years ago. You may have read about it in your newspaper, heard it on the news, and it really did change the foods that were being offered. So the idea of smarter lunchrooms is that these small, subtle changes in how food is introduced works with that new policy and synergistically can really influence what kids choose and what they eat. It is based upon behavioral economic theory. The easiest way to talk about behavioral economic theory is to talk about the book Nudge. New York Times bestseller. This is part of the cover where the mama elephant is kind of nudging along the baby elephant. And behavioral economic theory, as it applies to this project, is really about the way that the choice is offered can really influence choice. Or the selection. And again, like I said before, the idea is to work with the school meal pattern, the new meal patterns, that instead of taking away choice, keep the choice, but influence and nudge in other ways. If you talk to a food service director, choice is really important to their participation. And participation is the financial backbone of their program. If participation drops, their revenue drops, and they will all tell you that their target participation level, and it's largely based on choice. Just a few examples of how choice engineering can work. Engineering the default, we all have a status quo bias. We love the status quo. If you read the book Nudge, they tell us that most of us will stay in the retirement plan that we were assigned to, even if we're smart people or financial people, that we're more likely to stay in that plan. And so one of kind of choice architecture is the easiest thing to do is just change the default. You know, you hear a lot about that with like happy, you know, packaged meals. Instead of making the default French fries, let's make it apples, and we've seen that in certain areas. The other one is anchoring to the known. If I were to ask you a question or ask you about a product that you don't know, you'll anchor it to something that you do know. And one of the best examples that we had in Ohio was we had a food service director that had a variety of schools, and one school was going through, you know, an industrial can of black beans in a menu, which isn't much. And another was going through cases of it. And so she said, I've got to investigate. And she went to the second school, and the way that they were introducing those black beans do you want some black beans? It's like what they serve at Chipotle. And so they were anchoring something that kids may not think that they're familiar with to something that they've heard about. So in the interest of time, I will move on. But so that's really kind of what we are doing here in Ohio, is we're taking the evidence-based strategies developed by Cornell and based upon behavioral economic theory and trying to, you know, spread it across the state. We did have 51 schools that represented 71 districts. And I put the Ohio Department of Education logo here because Susan Patton was really the one that coordinated all of this. You know, I worked with the university and the extension partners, and she did all of this recruiting, encouraging, contracting, related to the schools. So, this is our project model, our outcome project model, and it was also our evaluation framework. It's a really important slide. I think it's one of the most important slides that I have in this little set. To the left are some of the resources that I've already talked about. You know, we were really organized around three categories of resources. Our university partners were a valuable resource. Our school food service teams were a valuable resource. And the third resource that I haven't talked about was money, and that schools for participating can get up to $2,500 to buy materials, to buy baskets, and we'll show you some of that information later. We were also organized around three categories of activities as well. Well, we were building those partnerships, what we were doing training sessions, monthly calls, we had process checklists. We really tried to standardize what we did as much as possible, and then we did a lot of information sharing through a cloud that became very, very large. Then the second grouping of activities were our interventions. Those interventions in the schools began with a cafeteria assessment. We encouraged them to implement at least 2 to 3 strategies, and then the goal was to do pre- and post-data collection. And then the third activity that I haven't talked about much yet is to build awareness, that we really were just initiating Smarter Lunchrooms in Ohio in this first wave, and we were thrilled to have the 51 schools in our first cohort, but we also knew that we were building something bigger. And so we were trying to, at the same time, we were doing presentations, we were doing cooking classes. Not so much that cooking classes were Smarter Lunchroom, but they were a way to engage people, and then we could talk about ways to prime, place, and appeal with that new food. And then building success stories, which I'll show you in a little bit. The last three columns were really our outcomes. And, you know, I attended a session here last year. It was on evaluating progress on a community-based obesity initiatives. It was an IOM, Institute of Medicine work group. It was chaired by Dr. Larry Green. And they said something that really stuck with me. And they talked about how at the community level, when we talk about dissemination and really like boots to the ground, how little we know about what works in obesity prevention related to eating. That we're good at evaluating in research environments, and we get caught up on things out in the community. And what they were proposing as an evaluation framework was a logic model. That we can't, you know, we get hung up, we have a lot going on when we're doing these things out in the community. And, you know, we can't randomly assign. It's tough to do comparison groups when we're talking about fixing a problem in public health. And so there are, suggestion is to have a program logic model and have those multi-level intervention, multi-level indicators of change. And their statement was that if you have a logic model that's based in logic and you have those multi-level measures of change, then it is plausible to make the case that your interventions produce those outcomes. And that was really the framework that we had, that we were going to focus on measuring outputs to show that what we planned was implemented and implemented with fidelity, that we were going to measure the short-term outcomes, and then in return, when we measured behavioral change, we could feel confident in that our activities, our work produce those outcomes. And so kind of the last part of my presentation will really focus on what we measured in the outputs and the short-term outcomes, and as well as the behavioral measures. So this is a really simple slide. It represents an enormous amount of work on behalf of the school nutrition teams, as well as information sharing. So again, I said in the previous slide, in a statewide project with 5 evaluation partners with 51 schools, with a series of strategies that people could choose from, measuring outputs was really important to us when we talk about reach and fidelity. And so we identified 12 project milestones, and we tracked progress in those milestones, but then also, and I'll show this later, we were tracking what was happening within those milestones. So this was going to be important for us in future initiatives, like what was working, what wasn't. But then it also, again, allowed to talk about what part of our programs were implemented. So, you know, the mini-grant application, the cafeteria observation, we did a sales and production trend analysis, and we did an observation summary and a work plan for all the schools. You know, we began with 51. You can see that we had really good participation. We call these people initiators, these schools. So we had about 51 schools initiate. The next phase, which we called schools that met the stage of preparation, is we did pre-waste data, production record data, and then ordering and receiving materials. And we had about 40 schools, reach it to this stage. And then in the end, these were our completers. There were 4 milestones in completion: to implement the strategies that were planned, to do post-waste data collection, production data analysis, and then that we wrote the success story. I'll talk about this later, but you can see that post-data waste collection is somewhat shorter than what we had planned. I'm not sure what the weather was like last winter where you were, but we really were affected by the Arctic freeze. So many of our post-waste data collections got canceled because of the freeze, but then there was also the ripple effect. I'll give you a case study in a minute, but you know, it wasn't just that the collection got canceled, it was that domino effect, that routines got changed and priorities got changed, and you know, it was just hard in some instances to get back for that waste collection. So that's kind of what happened on the outputs level. So again, like I said, within the milestones, we were tracking what was happening. And so one of the things that we were really interested in is what was being adopted and by whom. And again, so this was laying the groundwork for moving forward. And so we tracked the popular strategies that were implemented at the elementaries. Renaming vegetables was the most popular strategy that was adopted. You may have heard about renaming vegetables. It's made it onto NPR. It's been published. You know, it's one of the most widely publicized evidence-based strategies that Cornell has developed. Fruit in multiple locations, so in fruit baskets, putting it at registers, bundling it with things, and then a lot of signage, item signage, like I have along the bottom, and then like directional signage, like what's over here and what's over there. So that was popular at the elementary level. At the high school and middle level, it was there was greater variation. That schools were still interested in increasing fruit and vegetable consumption, but it took on different looks. So fruit in multiple locations was still popular. We bought a lot of fruit baskets in Ohio last year. But also working on salad bar placement, salad bar appeal, bundling fruit and vegetables with other meal components, as well as pre-made salads, like I'm showing you down there in the side. Again, meal participation becomes more of an issue as students become older. And if a high school has open lunch, meal participation is something that schools are really interested in. So that was kind of an overarching theme at this level. Menu boards, grab and go, things like that are what we saw. Okay, so one of the other things that we did last year is, so I said that, you know, we could have done better on the post-waste data collection. We did really well on the pre-intervention waste data collection. We were actually able to collect waste in 37 schools, over 13,000 trays, and at all 3 levels. again, through those partnerships between the schools and the universities, we were pretty successful in that. I will tell you that this is not only kind of an evaluation tool that we're using, it has been a huge education tool in Ohio. We are talking about food waste in school cafeterias in Ohio. And it's not we're talking about it in a vague, general kind of way. We are talking about it in a specific, almost empowered way. The schools that we work with know their high waste areas. And they'll immediately then tell you, and this is what we're going to do about it. It's not this kind of vague thing that they're hearing about on the internet or they're reading about in the paper. They know what their food waste is. And they're really empowered to do something about those high waste areas. There were not a lot of surprises, though, if you're familiar with food waste. Vegetable waste was the highest. The categories within vegetable waste, you know, about 70 to 75% of dark greens were thrown away. About 70% of red oranges were thrown away. Starchy sides. Oh, 5 minutes. Okay. So I'm going to kind of pick it up because I have a few more things that I want to show you. But we were able to aggregate food waste, and it's been a great tool for us. We had a food service director training a couple weeks ago, and there was great interest in this. Okay. So now in our logic model, we're talking about those behavioral outcomes. And so we used observation, we used production records, and we used waste. I think I've talked about all three of those. And our first goal was to measure change at the building level. So we had, you know, 28 schools that made it to that were completers. And so what were we able to measure there at the end? And we had pretty good success, but it looked different in different buildings, dependent upon what the goal was and what the indicator was. So in one high school, whole fruit selection increased by 21%. And the way that they accomplished that is, much like what Melissa was talking about, is giving fruit the prime location. That they had a lot of snacks, and so they moved the snacks, again, choice is important, just moving them out of the central path and giving that prime location to the fruit in beautiful, attractive baskets. And just that, the whole fruit selection went up by 21%. You know, similar success to what Cornell has reported for broccoli. We had a number of schools, again, rename broccoli, like I mentioned, and selection goes up and waste goes down. The third school is ours, and I'll just talk about that one and then kind of skip the next one. But we had a school that had a salad bar. It was new. It was beautiful. But it was a perfect case study for smarter lunchrooms. It was the last item in line. And if you know anything about smarter lunchrooms, you know that the first item in line has an 11% advantage. You want that best item as the first item. And so this salad bar not only was the last item, it was quarantined off almost by a steel kind of crowd control bar. And so what we did is we moved that salad bar 2 feet, and we turned it slightly, and it became the first item in line. And then she did wayfinding, and I'll show you some pictures of that. Now, 650 sounds unbelievable, and everyone always questions that number. It was based upon observation, and part of the reason it's so high is because the initial number was so low. It went from 10 students using the salad bar to 113 in one day, from going from last to first. So I said an important part of our success, of sharing successes, was developing success stories for schools. So we spent a lot of time developing a design that was both educational and informal, that would help the schools celebrate what they did, but then also educate the people that they shared it with. So up in the top, I know it's hard to read, we really coach in our state about prime, place, and appeal. And so what we've done there is, how did the school prime, how did the school place, how did the school make that appealing? Then we have photos and results, and those are on the ODE website, and we are now sharing those with all kinds of people. So the... Sorry, I'm rushing, trying to get to the most important stuff. So the second thing that we wanted to do in that last box was we really wanted to aggregate across buildings. Everything that I shared with you so far is at the building level. And, you know, there were some challenges with that. We were able to do that with our elementary schools. We had 8 elementary schools that chose to rename vegetables, things like sparkly broccoli, tiny trees. They did beans. They did lettuce. These pictures are one of the schools. And all schools did it differently, how they did their renaming. This school did it through a coloring contest. It's called Hello, My Name Is. And, oh, it's just, and then they filled the cafeteria with every submission. Everyone was looking to see it was just wonderful. And so we were able to aggregate data there. As someone who does research, I stand here and encourage you to interpret these with a little bit of caution, that, you know, the interventions did vary a little bit. Some people chose beans and broccoli, some people did lettuce, somebody renamed all the names. But what we're encouraged about is across the categories of those targeted items, waste is going down, which in our mind means that consumption is going up. So for those dark greens, it's going down by about 8%. This red-orange, it's going down, and the legumes, it's going down. We are going to look at this a little bit more. This was the only grouping of schools that we were able to aggregate. Schools did different strategies at the upper levels. They had different indicators. We had some incomplete data. But that is our hope going forward, that we're able to aggregate more across buildings. So in conclusion, we had three conclusions. We had high reach. You know, we're a dissemination project. We were one of the early states to be adopted, to be funded at the state level. We were able to reach schools that fed over 28,000 kids in some pretty simple strategies. Schools were interested in these smarter lunchroom strategies. If schools had to drop out, it was because of, you know, a staff change or something like that. We had moderate levels of adoption. It was easy to adopt. We established our evaluation framework, which we're going to continue. And in the interest of time, just moving forward, we're going to move in a direction of easier to implement toolkits. These were all individually developed plans, and schools weren't interested in that. They wanted us to arrive and say, today's Smarter Lunchrooms Day. We rechange everything, and then we're done. And that will give us more time for our second goal, which is to improve the behavioral outcome measures. So with that, I say thank you. Our annual report is on the ODE website. I am going to do a plug for the last entry. I do belong to a community of practice from Cornell University. We are looking for members. I'm a team leader for our group if you'd like to be a part. And the idea is just to share what we're doing to improve nutrition at the school level. Thank you.